Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
Welcome, Bill Michaels Show, on the air. We're glad to have you. Hopefully you're having a terrific day today. We certainly appreciate you joining us. Some good Bucks chatter a little while ago, talking some Brewers baseball as Chase Anderson signs a contract extension, basically taking care of the arbitration years, and he can make some more money now along the way. And I want to get back into some Packers and National Football League in general. Going to talk with Steve Palazzolo, our buddy from We See Him at Super Bowl every year, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. He's coming up here in just a moment. This portion of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Cousin Subs. And don't forget Cousin Subs right now. They have that brisket going on, which is fantastic. Stop in and pick that up, or the Bill Michaels, which is the sandwich that we have dubbed for us. So walk into any Cousin Subs and say, I want the Bill Michaels, extra mayo, extra cheese, and the pepperoni melt. You're good to go. And also don't forget that they want to put you in the best seats in the house, in the 50-yard line of Lambeau Field. Go to Packers.com/best seats, and you could win a pair of seats on the 50-yard line, plush leather recliners, all compliments of Cousin Subs, where they believe in better. Let's bring in Steve now from Pro Football Focus, Steve Palazzolo, the senior analyst there. Steve, how you been, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back.
So I we'll start out with this Packers team. Obviously, the rankings and everything's changed since Aaron Rodgers went down, but this is a team that I felt coming into the season, they needed a defense to be in the top 15. And in some players, some plays, they've been good, but for the most part, they have not lived up to expectation. And now they have to be even better. So when you start looking at these defenses and ranking these defenses, where do you see statistically the deficiencies in the Green Bay Packers right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was definitely a big question coming into the season. They had a disappointing year, I think, last year on the back end and the secondary, and I think that's still, you know, a bit of an issue. You know, Kevin King, I think, on the outside, we've seen, you know, flashes of what they wanted, you know, getting him as a rookie and, you know, with the upside that he brings with his size and movement skills, but he's had his ups and downs. You know, Josh Jones flies around and makes a lot of plays, but they've put him into a challenging position, playing a lot of linebacker essentially as a safety. You know, Demarius Randall has had his ups and downs at corner too. So I think it's still the secondary and just an inconsistent pass rush. You know, you have a guy like Mike Daniels in the middle and an emerging Kenny Clark who's been a lot more disruptive these last few weeks, but, you know, just not the same week to week production from, say, Clay Matthews, Nick Perry off the edge. So I think it's just that whole pass defense as a whole, you know, when they need them, it's just, you know, hasn't taken that step forward that we wanted to see coming into the year.
How much has going to Clay Matthews, because after this year, if they want to cut him loose, there's no ramification. How much has his numbers and ability, because I've seen him lose a step, but how much has he declined?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, it depends on what you're comparing to. You know, 2000, our highest graded game seasons for him, 2011, 2012. So there's been a slow decline off of that. You know, as far as pure grades go, he's definitely bounced back overall this year compared to the last 2 years. I think in part because he's, last couple of years playing a lot of inside linebacker. And again, he made a lot of flash plays, but also was out of position quite a bit. So I think there's still something there as an edge rusher. He's just not at that top echelon of those guys rushing off the edge like he was at one point during his career. So I think that would be, you know, you're talking about a guy that you need to, I don't want to use the 10 sack thing because I don't truly just believe in sacks, but you want this hypothetical 10 sack guy. And I'm just not sure if he's at that level at the moment.
Also, you've got a guy like Kenny Clark up front, and between him, Blake Martinez, some of these young guys that we've seen progress, their numbers and their look overall, just to the eyeball test, has been better. Some of the areas that are getting better for the Green Bay Packers, I look at some of these young guys and say, okay, maybe for what they've drafted in the past wasn't great, but at least you've got some guys that are on the come numerically.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Kenny Clark now grading at 88.1 and our PFF 0 to 100 grades. Blake Martinez at 82.5, both very good grades. Kenny Clark's last 3 or 4 weeks, he's been as good as any interior defensive lineman in the NFL. I mean, he's been disruptive in the run game, and everything that I saw on tape from him at UCLA starting to show up at the NFL level. He's really good at handling blocks and knowing how to shed blocks. He's not getting the sacks, but he's been more disruptive as a pass rusher. And then Blake Martinez, one of our most efficient run defenders so far this year from a grading standpoint, flying to the football, making a lot of plays. So absolutely encouraging to see those guys really stepping it up, especially Clark these last few weeks.
Talking with Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus, the senior analyst there. I want to look at big picture now, because in the NFC North, we take it kind of for granted that the Packers are just going to be on top and everybody else is fighting for second place. Now you got to look at some of these teams. If defense is going to win you championships, one of the better defenses, well, top two really is probably Minnesota and I dare say Chicago. They've been so good defensively this season, specifically in scoring points.
Yeah, so I mean, Chicago's an interesting one because we put out some defensive rankings a couple weeks ago. They came at number three. And even internally, we were looking at each other saying, wait, let's run these numbers again. How are the Bears at number three? And then they go out and have this suffocating performance against the Carolina Panthers, score 14 points defensively, only give up three. And they've gotten some really, really good contributions from, just unsung players. Adrian Amos at safety and, Danny Trevathan in the middle of that defense at linebacker, Akeem Hicks. So I've really loved what the Bears have done defensively, and they've played a challenging schedule of offenses. And then the Vikings, there was a point last year, 6 or 7 weeks into the season where they looked like the best defense in the league. They gave every quarterback in the NFL that they played their worst game of the year, including Aaron Rodgers last year. And they're doing the same thing. They're able to pressure up front with Everson Griffin. And you just have a bunch of versatile players like Anthony Barr bouncing back. Harrison Smith, still one of the best safeties in the NFL. So it is this old school NFC North feeling, this defense first type of division, and the Vikings and Bears certainly have two of the league's best so far this season.
Where does Detroit fall in all of this?
Detroit fans kind of hate us right now at PFF because we kind of throw the wet blanket on their good record the last couple of years. I thought last year they really overachieved. Those fourth quarter comebacks were really difficult to sustain. I give Matthew Stafford a ton of credit for what he did last year, but if you just look at the roster, they're just not great top to bottom. We were feeling similar about them this year. They were sitting at 3-1, now 3-3. And even when they were at 3-1, we were saying, I don't think that they're one of the better teams in the league. They've had some overachieving performances defensively. There's no doubt about that. But I just think their inability to consistently run the ball. I do think that, pass rush wise, they're getting great performance from Anthony Zettel. But, it's tough to expect that to continue. So I think Detroit has been a little overrated or not as good as their record has shown these last couple of years.
Right now, because as far as the NFC goes, are we looking at the best team in the NFC really being Philadelphia with Carson Wentz at this point?
I mean, if you're just saying up until this point in the season, yes. If you're saying going forward, I think it's just this wide open race. I wouldn't sleep on the Cowboys yet. I don't think they're as well-rounded as they were last year, but with still Dak and some weapons on offense, I wouldn't sleep on them. We know that Seattle has a tendency to kind of sleepwalk through the first half of the season, and before you know it, they look like one of the best teams in the league. So, I think right now you say Philadelphia. I really love where they improved. They've had, by our numbers, one of the best rosters in the NFL for a couple of years now, but they were weak in the wrong spots, which was wide receiver and cornerback. Now they're getting a career year from Patrick Robinson at corner. They have guys like Alshon Jeffery and Nelson Agholor, really shoring up their receiving core. So that's why they're playing well right now. They're good in the trenches. They're good in these other spots. They've got some injuries to overcome. So, yeah, to this point, you say the Eagles, but, it's way too early to count out a team like the Seahawks. And like I said, the Cowboys, they're lurking around, and I think they can do some damage.
Again, talking with Steve Palazzolo, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. Go to the AFC side. We know the Patriots just always find a way to be there. What is their deficiency right now? Because they seem a team like more so now than in the past, like they have some susceptibility.
Well, yeah, it's been the defense to this point, but of course they also just came off this Sunday night game where they shut down Atlanta's offense, held them to 7 points, and even that was a garbage time touchdown. So it's one of those teams where on paper the defense doesn't look great, especially the front seven, but they didn't look great in the front seven last year when they went and won the Super Bowl. They had a little bit better talent, but they're a team that I think defensively right now you can throw the ball on them, but it does feel like this team that Belichick's going to find a way to maximize their talent down the stretch, and that defense will get a little bit better. I look on the offensive side of the ball, Tom Brady, our highest graded quarterback once again. He doesn't show any signs of slowing down, but they've had some issues in the red zone this year, just a little inconsistent. So they're not putting up 30 points a game like we're used to seeing them. So if anything, it's, you know, the defense, you have time to throw and you could probably create some big plays there overall. And then offensively, I'd say red zone offense so far has just been a little bit less than what you usually see out of New England.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, Kansas City Chiefs, obviously, we look at a team like even Oakland who's struggling right now, but who is the cream of the crop right now? This is probably one of the most balanced seasons I can remember for just ups and downs, and I can't figure it out in a long, long time.
It's a beautiful year of parity. I described it the other day as I think you're just seeing a lot of mid-tier quarterback play, just a lot of average quarterback play, which creates some of this parity, but also there are a lot of defenses that have really stepped it up. There's bad offensive lines, too, around the league, but a lot of defenses have really stepped it up, the Pittsburgh Steelers being one of them, a defense that they've really tried to reshape the last couple of years, and they look deeper in the secondary than they have in a long time. You know, they're creating a little bit more pressure on the quarterback. Their defensive front is so much better this year with Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt both on pace to have career years. So I think as far as parity goes, it's the quarterback play across the league just hasn't been great. And you have teams like the Steelers defense that are really emerging. And, I think that it's the opposite of what I expected from Pittsburgh this year, but I think that does put them in the mix in the AFC. And, Kansas City has the potential to be up there defensively. They've just been they've given up a lot more than we expected over these last few weeks.
Always good to talk to you, Steve. We certainly appreciate it. Thanks for the breakdown, too, man. I know there's some deficiencies in this Green Bay Packers football team. They've been excelling in the run game, but it's hard to tell offensively speaking because they've had so many injuries, and obviously with Aaron Rodgers down, now we just kind of wait and see.
Yeah, just watch and enjoy Kenny Clark. Watch him emerge, and Aaron will be back before you know it.
Hey, well, real quick, one more question. What do you think of the Green Bay Packers as far as their wide receiving core?
I think they're okay. I mean, look, Davante Adams, I think, is a little hot and cold, but you know, when he's good, you know, he's shifty and he can get open, and Jordy Nelson may not be what he was in maybe 2014, but I still think he's fine as well. You know, maybe Aaron elevates them a little bit, but I think they have, you know, enough versatility, guys who can get open short, intermediate, and deep. I like them overall. They could probably use one more weapon, but I think it's a solid core.
Appreciate it, pal. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yep, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
There you have it. And he drops off. Steve Palazzolo, he is with Pro Football Focus. Always good to talk to him. They really do a great analytical breakdown numerically of all the positions, and they can rate guys highly, lowly, whatever. I mean, but he, like he said, Blake Martinez, an up-and-comer, but pay attention to what Kenny Clark has been doing. I mean, if you're looking for a bright spot in this season so far, that's one of them. Kenny Clark has really, really played well. We're going to do this. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. I want to get, and I know we're running a little bit late, John Feinstein coming up at the bottom of the hour, by the way, the author of the first major, the inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup. John is a terrific writer. He's been a talk show host. I mean, he's been all over, and you know his work. He is going to join us coming up here at the bottom of the hour. But as the Bucks head back to the Mecca tonight, I know it's going to age you a little bit, but give me some of your best memories, not necessarily the Bucks, but of the Mecca, of the UWM Panther Arena, if you've been to it, if you've seen it, or maybe just watching a game on television. Give me some of your memories. Coming up next on the Bill Michaels Show.
This is the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network, presented by Marshfield Clinic Health System.
Show is on the air. We are so, so, so glad to have you. How's your day today? Hopefully you're having a terrific one and going back memory lane, as we want to call it. Doing a little bit of that. Taking a walk down memory lane as the Bucks return to the Mecca tonight. And just kind of gauging your thoughts or maybe some memories to say, you know what? Give us some of your memories of Bucks basketball. Give us some of your memories of maybe the Mecca itself. It doesn't even have to necessarily be, you know, Bucks basketball. It can be something else. Give us your thoughts. 855-830-8648. 855-830-8648. On the loans by Kipta, we only have about 5-10 minutes for this. I just wanted to kind of go over a few things and just kind of say, hey, the Mecca has been, you know, a part of culture here forever. I mean, it is what it is. And it's such a cool building, for lack of a better. It just is. It's just a cool building. So just kind of gauging your memories. As a matter of fact, a buddy of mine, Chris, just texted me and said the one memory he has there is Don Nelson and the fish ties. And I do remember that. Now, I wasn't here for that, but I do remember that. The Don Nelson and the fish ties. And look, I can talk about, you know, when Bruce Pearl, that's my point of reference, when Bruce Pearl took the UWM Panthers to the Sweet 16. What an incredible time that was. Watching everything go on in this town just becoming electric, I guess is the best way to put it. It was just amazing. Watching, because I talked about this yesterday. With the Bucks, when the Bucks went to the postseason for the first time back in 1999, a long time, things got kind of giddy. And then in 2000, things really heated up. You had the arrival of Bruce Pearl. Tom Crean was here. Bo Ryan was off to you know, take on the Badger program. You had the Final Four with Dick Bennett and company. There's a lot of things going on. But the Mecca itself, I'll never forget, when they won that tournament and the buzzer went off, the one memory I have, their women's coach, Sandy Botham, she came barreling over the railing into the media center because she was into the media section because she was actually running down to go on the floor because they were storming the court. I mean, it was mayhem. It was such joy. And I'll never forget it because she came over the back railing right onto me, you know, crush me. But it was great. It was one of those great moments. It was fun and had a wonderful time celebrating what they had going on. I mean, Wave games, going there and watching the Wave. They had so much success under Keith Tozer for such a long period of time. And then when they go from the Bradley Center over to the Mecca and watching Wave games there and the championships and the quest for a championship and such. I mean, it was just so cool. There's so many good memories of that building. And anyway, I just kind of wanted to get some of your memories. I remember watching Cummings as a kid, whenever Bucks basketball would come on, even when I grew up in Cincinnati, we didn't get a lot of NBA. Unless Cleveland was playing, you know, Milwaukee or something, we didn't get a chance to see Milwaukee very much. But, you know, my whole history with the Milwaukee Bucks was my mom and dad were ginormous Oscar Robertson fans. So when Oscar went to Milwaukee, man, that's what we paid attention to. Every day we were reading the Post. There was the Cincinnati Enquirer and Cincinnati Post, two papers at the time. And my dad was reading the Post every day, telling me about the Big O. Every day. It was all about Oscar Robertson. It was all about how, you know, he was a triple-double machine. And he, you know, I mean, University of Cincinnati taking them to back-to-backs. And I'm just, it was, just grew up like that. That's what I grew up around. So I had already a lot of history attaching myself to this area because my mom and dad were huge Bart Starr fans as well. They loved Al McGuire. But as far as that goes, I mean, that building holds a ton of memories. 855-830-8648, 855-830-8648 on the loansbykip.com toll-free talk line. What's your thoughts? Give me your thoughts and memories of the old arena. You can go ahead and shoot it to us. Or you can just hit us up, 855-830-8648, 855-830-8648. 800-516-8648 on the loansbykip.com toll-free talk line. Give us a shout. Let's go to Carl listening to us in Tosa. Carl, welcome to the program, The Bill Michaels Show.
Hi, Bill. Love your show. I almost have your station on all the time when I'm driving. In fact, when you brought up the Bucks and memories, I had to pull over give you a quick call.
Sure.
A person that no one really talks a lot about who had a lot to do, I think, with the success of the Bucks and Marvels, Eddie Doucette.
Mm-hmm.
There's a record album that was put out when they won their championship that Eddie Doucette did the play-by-play. He had nicknames for all the players. He made it really fun, exciting, and engaging. Plus the fact when he and Johnny Mack got together, they started the Mack Fund. You know, that's a whole story in itself.
Right.
And Eddie Doucette went on. He did, world championship tennis. He was just a really great play-by-play guy. And I wanted to give you, before I hang up, Bill, just a real quick story about Al McGuire. I used to have a breakfast at Miss Katie's all the time. A wonderful breakfast diner. I'm sure you've probably been there
mm-hmm.
sometime.
Yep.
And every once in a while, Coach would be in there. And as friendly as can be. And I had an uncle who collected little military figures. And I would, always keep a couple in my pockets. Because when I would go there and see Coach, I'd come over. And, you know, people would just greet me. I have a smile for everybody. And, I gave him every once in a while one of those little metal military figures, and he collected them. He just loved them. He was a great guy. And love your show, Bill.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much. 855-830-8648. Let's go to Tom listening to us in West Dallas. Tom, welcome to the program, The Bill Michaels Show. What's going on, man?
Hi, Bill. How you doing today?
Doing well.
All right, that's great. I guess my memory of it, Bill, is going down with my dad back in the 70s, and after the game was over, you as a kid and your dad went with you, and you waited out of the locker room or the shower room, you know, like when they were down in the basement area and going to wait for an autograph as a kid, and they would actually sign it for it. It was kind of neat.
You know, I appreciate the phone call. We were talking about this yesterday with Gary Wolfel. When he used to walk out of the arena, and then you'd see the guys, the players, walking back to the hotel carrying their own bags, which is unheard of in today's day and age. You know, you get it, the accessibility was amazing the way you got a chance to just kind of interact with those guys. 855-830-8648. We'll get into more Mecca memories coming up in the final hour of the show. Stick around for that. There's a lot coming in, and I don't want to ignore anybody because there's a lot of great memories, and you're all right. But we do have John Feinstein coming up. He's the author of the first major inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup, an incredible story where the Europeans just had one or two little things along the way, no big deal, but they just had stacking unsuccesses, if you will. And it's just kind of how things went for the Americans down in Louisville. And we're going to talk more about that coming up next on The Bill Michaels Show.
Border to Border, The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network, presented by Marshfield Clinic Health System.
Welcome back. Bill Michaels Show is on the air. Don't forget tonight, coming up, we're going to be down at Pottawatomie Bingo Casino, the hotel down there in the Fire Pit Sports Bar. It's all brought to you by Bud Light. Going to be heard on many of these stations on the network. Thanks so much for taking a listen to us as always. But 6 to 8 tonight, it's yours truly, live and in person, is going to be our special guest, Mike Clemens from NFL Sirius Radio. And as always, the Bud Girls are going to be there getting you registered for all kinds of prizes. But that's 6 to 8 tonight. The Bill Michaels Huddle brought to you by Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. Joining you, always a pleasure to get a chance to talk with this guy. Had a chance to say hello to him a couple of times when he was out here for the U.S. Open. And one of the best writers out there in today's day and age, John Feinstein, author of the first major, The Inside Story of the 2016 Ryder Cup, now joining us. John, how you doing?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. I remember this. It was such an interesting Ryder Cup. There was just minuscule gaffes along the way from the Europeans that kind of stacked up, and I don't want to say necessarily it spelled doom, but it seemed to cast somewhat of a kind of a cloud of pall over all of this, right?
Well, I don't know if I would call it a pall. I mean, from the point of view of the Europeans trying to win the Ryder Cup for the ninth time in 11 tries, it did. But I think that certainly the Pete Willett thing, the story that he wrote making fun of the U.S. fans, was very poorly timed, coming 48 hours before the first ball in the air. And it was bad enough that Darren Clarke felt like he had to pull Danny Willett from the Friday morning lineup, which was a huge disappointment for Willett as the Masters champion, not getting to play that first morning. I think this was more of a perfect storm type deal from the U.S. standpoint, because they had lost so much. They had had this, you know, much hyped committee, the task force, as they called it, that selected Davis Love to be captain again and made a lot of changes in the approach, gave the players more input. The Europeans had six rookies on their team, and playing on the road with a golf course set up to favor the U.S. because that's home course advantage. It was a very difficult task for the Europeans. And in the end, the Americans played superbly on Sunday. That Patrick Reed-Rory McIlroy match was about as good a thing as I've seen anywhere in sports. It was completely electric.
What made this one stand out so much more? Because obviously the hype going into a Ryder Cup for golf is off the charts. I mean, it's the fan enthusiasm, I guess is the best way to call it, is at an all-time high when golf is in the Ryder Cup. What made this one so dynamic, in your opinion?
Well, again, I think the setting was great. As Minnesotans will tell you, they don't get that many big-time events up there, although they've had the Final Four. They have the Super Bowl this year, but getting the Ryder Cup was a huge thing for people up there. So they were all in right from the beginning. Every ticket was sold. Every corporate chalet was sold. I mean, they had 55,000 people on the grounds. And as you know, the Ryder Cup is unique. One of the reasons I call the book the first major is because there's no event in golf like it. You don't see fans reacting at other tournaments the way they react at the Ryder Cup. You don't see players reacting the way they react at the Ryder Cup. I mean, Jordan Spieth was literally injured by Patrick Reed doing a mid-five, not a high or a low-five, but a mid-five after Reed holed out on the sixth hole on Saturday, which was one of the turning points of the weekend, because Reed was so fired up that he practically knocked Jordan's wrist off. And Jordan said he couldn't grip the club for two holes. You don't see that happen in other events. So I think that there is a uniqueness to the Ryder Cup whenever it's played. But in this case, as I said, the U.S. having had the meltdown at Medina when it looked like we were going to win, up 10-6 going into Sunday, and then the Euros call it the miracle at Medina. Americans call it the meltdown at Medina. And that happened when it looked like the U.S. had a sure win. Then the loss at Glen Eagles, which led to the Tom Watson, Phil Mickelson takedown. And now we come to 2016. And people asked me before the matches began, because I'd been researching the book for a year at that point, is the U.S. going to win? And I said, if they don't win now, I don't know when they're going to win, because the setup was perfect for them. And the younger players coming into the team, particularly Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, Ricky Fowler, was also huge, because you didn't have as many guys who had scar tissue from previous defeats on the team.
How much was made or is made still of the Tom Watson, Phil Mickelson thing?
Well, I think once the U.S. won at Hazeltine, it began to fade somewhat. But during that period from 2014 to 2016, again, when I was researching the book, and I talked, you know, if you read in the book, I talked to both of them at length about it. And they're both still upset with one another. They'll never be friends, that's for sure. But I think what bothered a lot of people was not so much what Phil said, because to say the players should have more input, there's nothing wrong with saying that. And I don't think it's that important, but I think it's important psychologically to the players to feel like they're heard. But to say it right after Europe had kicked our butts, frankly, took away from the European win. It came off sounding like sour grapes. It was more the timing of what he said than what he actually said. And I know Watson felt that way. I know Paul McGinley, who captained the European team, felt very strongly that way. But in the end, it did help bring about the task force. And as I said, even though I think a little too much was made of the task force, I thought Jack Nicklaus described it perfectly. He said, if the task force means we'll make more birdies, I'm all for it. Because that's what it comes down to.
Right.
Who makes the most birdies. But I think it did help with the players' approach. And I also think it helped a lot, Bill, that this team actually did get along. The U.S. players were always claiming, you know, oh, we get along, we play ping pong together. at every Ryder Cup, and then they go out and get whipped. But this time, nobody played ping pong. There were two ping pong tables in the room, but nobody played because they were actually enjoying one another's company. They were actually bonded as a team. Davis Love deserves a lot of credit for that, and that's one of the reasons why they went out and played so well.
Talking with John Feinstein, author of the first major, the inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup, which you can find. Where can they find it? Because it's on the New York Times bestseller. I was going to say, it's all over the place.
Yeah, it just came out on Tuesday, but you can get it at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. All the bookstores should have it by now. And if you walk into a bookstore and they don't have it, start screaming and yelling, please.
Jump up and down as well, without a doubt.
Hold your breath until you take a look or get the book.
There is always a stigma whenever we bring up Tiger Woods, as if he's this unapproachable, this pedestal, this unlikable figure behind closed doors. What is his role in all of this?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think a lot of the description you just gave of Tiger has been accurate for many years. He was very distant from the other players. Mickelson, who he never got along with, said something very interesting to me, that he believes that when Earl Woods died in 2006, Tiger started to change, that Earl had raised him, that everybody's the enemy. The only person you trust is me. You know, if you got to play on a Ryder Cup team, okay, you got to play for public relations reasons, but you don't give anything away. You don't help the other guys play better because you're going to have to face them in the major championships down the road. But when Earl died, Tiger started to back away from that, and maybe not consciously, but he started to become more one of the guys. And at this Ryder Cup, when he was a vice captain, remember, he only played on one winning Ryder Cup team as a player, 1999 in Brookline. And he was so invested in this that it got to the point where the players joked about it, how into it Tiger was. Brent Snedeker told me that he was talking to Tiger on the phone one day, and Tiger was going on and on about matchups in the foursomes and in the four ball, and where do you want to play in the singles, and I think we ought to lead off with so-and-so, and on, till he finally said, you know what, Tiger, I got to go. You need a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tiger was so invested in this. And Davis told me that on Saturday night, after everything was done, and they're, you know, all trying to get a few hours sleep before the singles on Sunday, that a text popped into his phone, and he looked at it, and it said 11:51 p.m., and it was from Tiger. And it said, the lineup is set. We're ready to go. Everything is done. I got nothing to think about. I can't sleep. And that was very different from the Tiger Woods of the past. And most of the players were thrilled and surprised by it.
It's interesting because Tiger is a guy that has been so polarizing in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like in that realm there was this – how do I put it? Do I say, is acceptance the proper adjective?
I don't know if it was accepted so much as bonding. That he, for maybe the first time in his career as a player, and he still thinks of himself as a player, actually bonded with other players. He and Mickelson were actually joking around. Phil said that they were in the car one day, and Phil likes to give people a hard time. I mean, he's very proud of his ability to, I won't use the word on the air, but he's a blank giver.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying to Tiger, can't wait for you to come back on tour. I really hope you can hit the ball on the planet again sometime soon. And he said, Tiger looked at him and he said, Phil, what do these numbers mean to you? 1479. That's the number of majors,
right,
and the number of tournaments Tiger's won. And Phil just said, trump card. I mean, I got no answer for that one.
Right.
You know, he's 5-42, which is pretty darn good, but it ain't 14-79. And he said, years ago, that conversation never would have taken place. And
right.
I think, because remember, the younger guys in particular, Fowler, Spieth, Reed, Brooks Koepka, even Dustin Johnson, they grew up worshiping Tiger Woods because he was the greatest player in the world when they were young. And to have Tiger be, you know, in that team room and part of the team and part of the kidding around, helping them get ready to play, that was a thrill for all of them.
What does, and I'm going to veer from the book for just a moment, but I did want to mention Tiger because I think when we talk golf, he always happens to pop into the conversation. What does golf need him, or does he need golf?
I think the latter at this point. I think he very much needs golf. Remember, he's a divorced guy. Every movie he makes is a story. He doesn't get to be around his kids that much because of the divorce agreement. Golf is his life. It still is. And that's why he so desperately wants to come back and play. Now, Tiger doubled ratings when he was playing regularly. He doubled sponsorships. I mean, he transcended the sport. He was a transcendent figure. But now you've got Rory McIlroy. You've got Jordan Spieth. You've got Ricky Fowler. You've got John Rahm. You have all these great young, really good young players who embrace the spotlight. I guarantee you none of these guys will ever own a yacht and name it Privacy the way Tiger did.
Right.
They like it. They enjoy being in the public eye. They enjoy signing autographs. They enjoy themselves with the media most of the time, I think. And I think golf is in great hands with or without Tiger. Having Tiger back would be good for the game, no question. But people who are doomsaying and saying golf would fall off the planet when Tiger retired, whenever that came, I think are going to be proven wrong.
John, one more thing before I let you go. And it is in reference to Tiger, but into the youth of today, Tiger set the bar at this particular level. This is a guy that, you know, we saw Jack Nicklaus and then we saw Tiger. And we saw just this reigning greatness where it was a dominance and you didn't dare approach him on a Sunday if he had a lead. Now you've got guys that you've got a group and you've got faces, but we're constantly grasping for the guy that's going to be the next. They do it in NBA all the time. Who's going to be the next Jordan? Will we ever have that? We may have that again, but out of this group of guys, in Rory, in Jordan, I mean, you can go through the whole list that you just went through. Well, is that guy there, or is this just a group of guys we should enjoy?
I think, you know, Nicklaus and Woods, they're once in a generation type of players. They're separated by 36 years. Tiger's 41, Jack's 77. So if we don't get another Tiger for another 36 years, or 40 or 30, whatever, I don't think that'll be surprising. I think that's more the norm than the abnorm. But we can have plenty of Phil Mickelsons. You know, Rory's already won four majors. Jordan's already won three. I think that Justin Thomas, who I didn't even mention because he wasn't on the Ryder Cup team last year, has the ability to be a big star. But I'm with you. I hate it when people say this guy could. Whenever some young player wins a major tournament or something, there's always a graphic on TV comparing this guy at the age of 21, 22, 23, 24 to Tiger. That's not fair. That's not fair to the guy. Just let him be who he is, and that's going to be pretty darn good. But it's very unlikely that it'll be Tiger Woods. The extreme example I remember of that years ago was, you remember a basketball player at North Carolina named Jeff Lebo?
Mm-hmm.
Now a coach at East Carolina.
Yeah.
And he's a nice college player. As a freshman, CBS is doing a game, and Brent Musburger says, a lot of people have compared young Jeff Lebo to Jerry West. And I went, what? You know, let the kid be
right.
Jeff Lebo. And, of course, he wasn't Jerry West because, you know, there weren't five players in the history of the game who were Jerry West.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. John, great stuff. They can find the book out everywhere. It's called The First Major, The Inside Story of the 2016 Ryder Cup. Great read, and we hope to have you back on the program real soon, okay?
I look forward to it, Bill. Thanks for
absolutely,
having
pal. Talk to you soon. There you go. John Feinstein joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard. They treat you fair. 80-plus years they've been getting it done. Call them 844-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com. This portion of the program brought to you by our great friends over at the Neumel Medical Center, treating guys with ED all over the state of Wisconsin and beyond the borders. They do some great things with 98% success rate in treating ED. If it's the low T treatments, what I went in for, if you're looking for better mental clarity, better mood, better stamina, just feeling better in general, giving you that pep and energy, that can help you, or the all-in-one weight loss program. I am the I'm the spokesperson for that because I'm down over 60 and 67 to be exact today, and it really does work. Call them 414-455-4451, 414-455-4451. That's the Neumel Medical Center. Come back with more right after this.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network, presented by Marshfield Clinic Health System.
Welcome back to the program. Bill Michaels' show is on the air. Got to go into UW-Whitewater football. Talk with head coach Kevin Bullis. Get some scoops here because, Coach, last week you guys had not only a terrific evening, a lot of fun, but then you guys back it up with a 20-7 win. And you guys seem to be doing well right now, not only in the sense that are you getting wins, but your team defensively is really playing some good defense right now. You've only given up 21 points in the last three games.
I tell you, feeling the groove right now. I mean, defensively, our guys have been really shutting down the run game at this point. We need to keep on doing that. And when you do that, Bill, as we've talked about in the past, man, now it allows our D-line to tee off and our coverage to play pass and allows us to come out of games with these types of scores.
Well, I was going to get to that because you guys right now, you're going to be facing a really tough Stevens Point team coming off of a loss. They ended up getting beat 23-17 by UW-Stout. But this is a game where they believe their program's on the rise. You guys know your program's been good for a long period of time. Both teams have struggled this season. What do they bring to the table?
You know, the volatility. They're really explosive. I mean, they are explosive offensively and defensively. They got a long passing attack. I mean, they can attack you. And they love to. I mean, they're going to challenge our DBs. And then defensively, Coach Janelle, I mean, man, he's going to bring some heat at our quarterback, and he loves the blitz game. So it's going to be an exciting, explosive, volatile game.
Looking forward to it. I know you guys are going to be at Perkins Stadium yet again. You close out your season over the next couple of weeks at Perkins Stadium. Actually, you guys are at Stevens Point, and then you come back home because you have the big one against Platteville, and then you close it out against Eau Claire. So still a couple of games for the fans to get to, but this one's you got to get by first. The old adage is one game at a time.
Not even a question, and that's WIAC football. You better not take one of them for granted, because if you do, you'll regret it.
Looking forward to it. We'll talk again next week. I will give you 15, 20 minutes next week, Coach. I apologize. We had John Feinstein on for a little bit, and hopefully you enjoyed listening to that a little bit. But good luck to you guys this weekend. We're going to talk about that UW-Platteville game and homecoming, because that's going to be a great one in a snot locker over there at Perkins Stadium next week, okay?
Looking forward to it, Bill. You take care.
You too, pal. There you go. Coach Kevin Bullis, thanks for being patient with us. More of the Bill Michael Show after this.
Wisconsin-wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network, presented by Marshfield Clinic Health System.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.